Hello, Cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 169 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we are back in the media pit with Zach and Michael. We're talking about ruts and guts and some crazy ideas about changing cyclocross and Matthew Vanderpool and just a little bit of everything. But it's a good conversation, especially leading into our final week of UCI racing. And then on to Washington for Cyclocross Nationals. Exciting. Cyclocross Radio is brought to you again this week by Works HydroShot. Ride, tread, rinse, and repeat. Works HydroShot. It's the ultimate tool that's practically made for cycling enthusiasts like you. We love the Works HydroShot. Actually, we got one to give away. I'm going to tell you more about that once we get done with Nationals and sort of settles down a little bit. And then we're going to ramp back up with this big contest so that one of you all can win the Works HydroShot. This is a great tool. It's honestly a must-have. It's a portable power cleaner. It uses the Works 20-volt PowerShare batteries. And we have a deal for you. If you go to yourcleanbike.com, enter the promo code CLEANBIKE, you'll get 15% off of any HydroShot items. That's yourcleanbike.com and enter the code CLEANBIKE at checkout. Get on that. And remember, one of you lucky listeners is going to win one of these after we're done with Nationals. Lots going on over at wideanglepodium.com. That's the podcast network that this show is part of. USA Communique, that's a show that I am doing with Lindsay Goldman, who is the membership director at USA Cycling. It's basically a good inside look at USA Cycling, and it's the subject matter each week is dictated by you. So if you send us letters at usacommunique@gmail.com, I will read them to Lindsay, and she will answer them for you. If she doesn't know the answer, you know, I get her the questions ahead of time, and then she goes out throughout the building and all the different departments at USA Cycling and tracks down a good answer to share with everyone on the air. So check out that one. Check out the Consummate Athlete. They have a great show with Magli Rochette this week. Slow Ride Podcast dudes they're breaking news. They were the first. Don't let anybody tell you differently. They were the first ones out there with the Crusher and the Tusher being bought by Lifetime. Those guys are getting the scoops straight from the source. Bike Shop CX, Gravelot doing great work as well. Check it all out at wideanglepodium.com. Become a member. Go to wideanglepodium.com/donate. Follow along with everything I've got going on at CX Airs on all social media, including the CX Heat Check, which you can find on the YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/CX Hairs. I think that's it. Let's get into the pit with Michael and Zach, and let's do that right now. Okay, here we are back in the media pit with Zach and Michael. Zach, hang tight because I need to ask Michael. Michael, how's it going?
Bill, before we get to the intros and the funny puns, I'm going to stay on brand. But, you know, it is December 2nd. I mean, I can't believe we're already in December, and some people celebrate Christmas. So I just want to know for you guys, and Zach, I see that you have some boxes in your background, and you're possibly moving, but I mean, you get to your new place, you'll probably decorate for the holiday, and I want to ask you both, do you guys prefer, for your Christmas trees, Douglas firs or Nobles?
I wasn't even close.
Yes.
I thought it was going to be some sort of gutsy performance.
I had him being in a getting out of his post-Thanksgiving rut with.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. He's too good. Yeah. He's really too good.
Wait, Douglas?
Douglas fir or Noble fir?
But who's Douglas in cyclocross?
Oh, the Doug is not part of the pun.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. I don't know. I'm going with a C+ on that one.
What? Man, did you get the other one?
What?
Brand. But it's Euro. She won.
Oh man, that one right by me. All right.
Oh,
B-.
Yeah, I missed that one.
Hey, Zach, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Bill. I don't have a funny pun, though.
That's okay.
It's good to be back in the pit. I do have to say, like,
that's not your lane.
Yeah. Okay. Should we? I mean, I listened to the episode last year or last week, episode 168. I mean, should we just do? I know that wasn't like at the top of the agenda, but what a great story.
Yeah.
About Rainy Park.
And yeah, Little Rainy Park,
bringing a World Cup to New York City.
Yeah. It's just the disconnect between what Rainy Park is and what they want to do in there is just amazing. But I guess there's hope for all of us now on the East Coast if we can, you know, come up with that quarter to half $1 million that basically anybody can host a World Cup in the U.S. if you have the money.
Yeah, well, if you're on the East Coast, I mean, it's just remarkable. Like,
so become a wide-angle podium donor,
and you could sponsor a World Cup.
And yeah, I'm sure we have enough in the coffers to sponsor a World Cup.
You could be a 1/100,000th shareholder of the new UCI World Cup in DC.
Yeah,
on the mall, I heard.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say, you could almost at that point call your shot and just like give enough and be like, pick which city on the Eastern Seaboard do you want us to host a UCI World Cup at? And
hey, the Giro was going to start in downtown DC.
Ooh.
Years ago.
Wait, for real?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We had a mayor who was like huge into cycling, and it was like a done deal. And then his tenure in office ended. So it never happened.
Well, Urban Cross is a thing now, like cyclocross in the city. So sure, why not? On the National Mall, why not?
Yeah, I mean, we're not far away. We're only a couple miles from the mall. We're a bike ride away from the mall, so we can do it. We have an enclosed area. We could charge 30 euros for our race.
What I think is interesting about that story, too, is sort of the way in which, like, this gentleman from the Flanders Classics, and I forgot his name, got a hold of Keith. You know, it wasn't sort of like you reach out to a promoter and like, but it was Googling cyclocross races.
No, I found on Facebook, and then he sent him a message. Ugh. It was Chris Martens. I'm assuming not the lead singer for Coldplay. Although that would be a really cool twist.
It's his non-union Belgian equivalent. But no, yeah, like you would think that it would be some sort of official like letterhead, like, dear so-and-so, we would like to inquire about you host. Instead, it's just like, yo, man, accept my Facebook message request. I found you on Facebook.
Yeah.
You've got to accept this certified letter and deposit this check.
Yeah, right.
But yeah. I mean, like too, it really makes me wonder about like what, honestly, this, they're going to be announcing the countries here in a couple of weeks and just what this is going to look like. That, like, if I was in that position going into like putting on a bike series in Belgium, I would do my research and try to figure out like, hey, who are the players? What are the big races? Like, what, you know, what's the lay of the land? And, you know, it's like these people are in charge of fundamentally remaking the sport in a way, and they can't really grasp like what a local race in the US without like maybe even Googling Rainy Park and realizing that it's the size of my backyard. I don't know. I think they were just so fixated.
I've heard this from other sources that they're just so fixated on New York City. And this was like as close as they got to actually being in New York City. But still, I don't know. I mean, I hope Trek's still there. Maybe, you know, I hope Jingle's still there, but they're definitely going to be, it's already like, I don't know, we have our UCI directors meeting and I don't know what's going to go on there because none of this is going to be decided when we have the meeting, and it's going to be, there are going to be US World Cups on the same dates that we've traditionally had UCI C1 or C2 races. So I mean, the whole schedule is just like our race, you know, like I think it's plopping down right about the time that DCCX and Charm City happen. You know, I think October 11th and 12th on that weekend, I think, is what they're kind of honing in on for the first U.S. World Cup. So they're really taking the sort of heart of our season and trying to find World Cups to throw in there, which, you know, is going to be interesting to try to work around.
That's right, because you guys do the meeting right the day after Nats, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like literally right about the day I think they're announcing just the countries.
Yeah.
I think they're announcing countries and dates on roughly the 15th or so of December. And so.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty close there. I think that's what I heard.
Yeah.
At least. So, man, so there might be like an emergency, like post-Nats podcast.
Yeah.
In addition to the post-Nats podcast.
Like, that's the whole, yeah, what's going to. I don't know. Maybe we should be excited about it. All new exciting times in cyclocross next year. We'll see what comes about.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe this gets said a lot over various like generations, but like it is actually an exciting time in cross and in, you know, general to road racing and just to reach and to get into some of your lane, into the Grodio sphere, just what's happening with gravel events and what's happening with big name road events and all this upheaval with the Cyclocross World Cups. It's, as someone who is a bit of a junkie on this stuff, you are every day. It's like some sort of new piece of information comes out. So I am, you know, I'm waiting on tenderhooks.
We will see. It will be interesting. But of course, you know, once that UCI schedule comes out in December, we all know that is like iteration one of 27 that will and it's the whole, oh look, so and so's not having a race this year. It's like, oh no, they are, they're just not on the schedule. Oh look, so and so's not having a race. No, they're just not on the schedule either. And
yes,
that whole game we get to play,
the how can we overact game.
Yes. Yeah. I think what we had on the agenda is, you know, we need to talk a little bit about Ruts and Guts, more the results and who did well. We were not there, so we're not going to try to pretend we know what happened in the races other than what we can see on the result sheets. But as, you know, we pointed out, what we look at is the storylines, and definitely there are some that have developed from this weekend, especially with one more weekend of UCI racing in at Resolution before we all head out for Nationals. And then maybe I thought we'd get into a little bit of the Twitter dust up, I guess I started, about if we need pits in amateur racing.
I was thinking maybe we could call this segment Bill's Pickles. Yeah. Bill's Twitter pickles.
Okay. But hey, let's start with Ruts and Guts. Just starting with the men. Didn't think that, we thought that our Canadian friends were done, but they're still out there racing. So Michael Vandenham, the Easton team, I guess, well, with Dylan sort of living in that area, they come down for that race. But Jen Jackson was a surprise when we get to the women, that she was still racing. We thought she was done, but Vandenham showing good form, having a really nice battle with Lance Haidt. So those two ended up 1 and 2, and then Drew Dillman and Brandon Fix, Scott Funston. Any takeaways from just hearing those top five, Zach?
Well, I thought, I mean, I'm actually curious to hear from Mr. Vandenham, if this is kind of like, you know, the second part of the Canadians season gets started here soon in Europe. I think he'll be going, and I know Meg Haley is going. So be kind of interested to see if this was kind of like his one kind of warm up, keep the legs fresh. I mean, he's been jumping in some local races, so it seems like that might be for him, you know, getting geared up again after, you know, pretty emotional. Like, that's a pretty emotional 2 weeks, like intense 2 weeks for those Canadians with Nats and Pan Ams back to back, I think.
Yeah, no, it is. It's sort of, and especially with Ruts and Guts, where you sort of saw more of those European conditions with some good muddy races before heading over there. And it's got to be sort of this weird thing where he's, you know, they're in these 2 weeks where you have all these people who are just like so honed in on getting ready for Nationals, and then they're just out there, all right, let's just race, just another race. Yeah.
I think, speaking of storyline, something to point out, though, is with Michael's win on Saturday, that was his first win, a UCI win on American soil, or not in Canada, since 2017.
Oh, wow.
Major Taylors. So he's won the, you know, races in Canada, but that's got to be a great boost for him and something to really help him, like, you know, carry into his Euro campaign. So just, I think that was definitely worth noting, and I'm sure that he's pretty stoked on that. I haven't seen any, like I said, behind the scenes social media, but Michael's the kind of guy that definitely likes to share when how he feels about things. So I'm excited to see.
Well, and I mean, and then, you know, but then looking at who he beat Lancey Pants on day one, who I guess we'll have a preview episode next week, but I think his name is going to be mentioned as certainly, if not a favorite to win, at least a favorite to podium. Drew Dillman's another one. Eric Brunner has strong potential to be U23 national champ. So there were some, you know, some hitters up there that he was also battling. So you can take away, like, hey, not only that, I beat some dudes who are trying to get in peak form for Nats, and they're going to be competitors at US Nats. So
I mean, he beat a world champion.
Yeah. He did. You're right. Yeah. I forgot about that. Sorry, Max. Sorry to leave Max out. He also did beat a world champion.
Oh, that's right. He did. Yeah. Yeah. Do you think Max was wearing his gold thong underneath his skin suit?
Knowing Max, there's like a non-zero chance that actually was the case. Yes.
Yeah, moving over to the women. Interesting race here. We saw the return of Ellen Noble. Good comeback for her, if we're calling it that. I think we have to check in with Ellen if it is or is not an official comeback. But win by 44 seconds over Sunny Gilbert, and then Crystal Anthony in third, aforementioned Jen Jackson in fourth, Raylan Nuss in fifth, and Jane Rossi behind her in sixth place. So a pretty good win for Ellen. I mean, really going away. So maybe that's she's going to race Resolution too, but sort of shoving herself back into that that picture for Nationals.
Yeah, I think, you know, she made a big deal that was her first year and her first win in over a year, and I think this is, you know, like you said, it's that weird time, as you said, Bill, everybody's getting ready for Nationals. And so it is also kind of an opportune time. And we've seen this before. And I always think back to Bill, some of your podcasts with Amanda Nauman talking about back in the, you know, going to these races during this time of year to get those UCI points. And these events late in the calendar actually turn out to be pretty pivotal for people's seasons. So, you know, it's good to see Ellen Noble on the top step again. You know, she's, when you have your national championships, you want all the best riders there competing against each other. And I, you know, Ellen is someone who obviously got third last year, and, you know, this weekend she beat Sunny, who got second at Nationals last year. So seeing those knives get sharpened before Nationals is great. And also, you know, I have to say, and I'll stay on brand here, it's the vlog bump.
Yep.
And you know, and she said she's going to be editing her own vlog, so maybe that's even more of a bump, you know?
Yeah.
It's the Carrie Warner style. Who knows?
And Zach, so even, you know, that Michael brings up a good point, which I really didn't even think about, is that with Ellen not racing as much this year, she doesn't have as many points, and we talk about how points don't matter as much this year as they have in past years, but one of the places they do matter is for staging at Nationals. And, you know, just a, you know, spoiler alert, she won day two as well. So that's 2 days of C2 first place points. That's moving her up in the grid, probably getting her, you know, back to the front row, which is going to be crucial at Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of riders, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I think we make a big deal out of this. And, you know, I think first or second row is a good goal to start. But, you know, in Ellen Noble's case, like, she is potentially the best starter in domestic cyclocross. And so, yes, I think for her, being on the front row matters. And I'm guessing that she would feel the same way of being able to be out in front, you know, to have a shot at, you know, knocking off some of the favorites that we're going to be looking at next week, to be either winning the whole shot or at the front and not having to kind of chase, make moves, try to get around, or be stuck in a position that she's not necessarily comfortable racing from. So, yeah, I think in her case especially, really good to get those points. And, you know, like, she benefits. Like, it's her style. Like, she's a fast starter, and she does it so well, like, every race.
Yeah, and also, you know, one of the other things worth mentioning here, and if you are a Flow Bike subscriber, Molly Herford had a interview, an article on Ellen on the Flow Bike site. I think it is a subscription only article, just sort of recounting the health issues that she has had throughout the year, and finally has a good handle on, you know, treatment and sort of getting better. And I think possibly coming out the other side of that. So we may see Ellen back on form where we saw her in years past as well, with that maybe behind her as well. So it should be, I like it, because, you know, we like, as we talk about, we like the storylines, and having her back in the hunt definitely will add another dimension to a nationals field that I think is already maybe more up for grabs than it has been in the past. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and like you said, I guess we'll get to see her at Resolution, but we won't have full resolution on necessarily how, you know, like, how far she's come, because it's, again, split fields. Riders are going to be making different decisions about where to race or whatever. And, you know, like you said, I think next week we'll be doing our Nats preview, but it's going to be like, yeah, where does she fit into this? And, you know, how can she upset, you know, what we're thinking about for the front? Because, I mean, her history certainly speaks for herself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I, just about that article too, like, I know personally I've suffered from thyroid issues this year, and I can't imagine what she's been going through, because the thought of, like, what I've had to deal with, and the idea of being an elite level racer at the top of her game in her sport, I give her a lot of credit for fighting through that and, you know, doing that interview, being open about kind of what she's gone through, because I can only imagine, like, how much it sucks.
Yeah, I will also add that she doesn't need the points to be in the front row. She's already pretty secure in the front row. Looking at UCI points, she will be Katie Keough is first American, then Compton, Hansinger, Farringer, Katie Klaus, who may not be even be in the elite race, Courtney McFadden, and then Noble. So she's already there.
Okay. Was this before her point haul, or?
Yeah, I think so, because it won't get.
Oh, that's right.
On
it doesn't
until
update
tomorrow,
until tomorrow.
Right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So
yeah,
she
well,
will.
So maybe not the UCI points, but those ego points that are needed.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Always winning begets winning. Yeah. It's always good.
Don't I not know that?
You and me both. All right, let's talk about the day. Should we move on to day two for Ruts and Guts?
Yeah, I think on the men's side, I think it was actually a group of three. I think Brunner was up there with Pants and MVDH. I think in my preview, I just ended up going with, like, all the nickname people, and I just started listing off, like, Dizzle Dillman and the Kid Kaiser and MVDH, and I'm like, why doesn't Brunner have it? Does Brunner have a nickname? Does Grant Elwood have a nickname? You guys need nicknames.
Yeah, I know. Got, like, Funstown on there.
But he's like, that. Is that his nickname? Are we trying to give out nicknames now? Like,
I think that's that's kind of our obligation as media members.
Is, okay.
We're allowed
Brunner,
to do that.
I mean, he's more funner. I mean, there's something there. I'm sure some of our Colorado listeners will let us know there are actually, you know, there are nicknames that we're not aware of, but.
We need to ask Brano. We need to ask Brano Fix and see. I'm sure Brano has nicknames for everyone.
I'm sure that's true, too.
Should we just go listen to Shred the Shit right now? I bet it's on there.
So I'm sure, like, Brunner's called Bro, and then Funston's called Dude. And then Max Chance also Bro. Grant's another dude.
Yeah, Max Chance is Bro with two R's though. Bro.
All right. Now that we have intellectually analyzed the men's race,
you know who did provide coverage was, Jen Jackson was doing Instagram stories.
She did a good job.
She did. Bill, I was thinking that maybe she needs to come into the fold as a Media Pit like camera person, because she was really like moving to get the shots.
I will be asking her for her footage. happy to pay for it, Jen.
And I was gonna actually, before, you know, getting prepped for this podcast, I was like, let me go back to those stories, but they are gone. So,
I think the fun thing about that too is that she was not only filming but also heckling at the same time as Vandenham was riding, and she was running next to him, explaining to him during the race that running was actually faster. So that
was a good moment. That's good. I hope that makes it into a heat check.
Yeah, I'll have to secure those rights. But yeah, so in the women's race, Ellen Noble taking the win on day two as well. Jen Jackson, 43 seconds back in. Am I on day two? Yeah.
Yep. That's day two.
Same time gap pretty much. In second, Raylan Nuss moved up to third place. Sonny Gilbert in fourth. Crystal Anthony fifth, and Rossi sixth. Amanda Nauman seventh. Beth Ann Orton making her way down from Pacific Northwest in eighth. So, and on down, you know, decent field size out there. You know, yeah. Maybe not as many sort of in the at the top that we, you know, some people taking the week off, but I think a 28 person women's field is pretty good for that race.
You know, it's interesting in that race too, is that they do the UCI race, and then they do a 1-2-3 field. So I know some promoters will, you know, if you're a Cat 1 or 2, you have to do the UCI race. Here they give those riders the option. So I think you do see, I mean, I'm assuming a lot of these names at the bottom half of the list are riders who might be a local who are like, heck, you know, let me jump into a UCI race and see how I go. Funny enough, there's a local kid in my area, Jack White, who I've been racing him since he was a teenager and used to beat up on him all the time. And now he smashes me at all the races. And he made his way out to Ruts and Guts and threw down in the UCI field. He has traveled to a bunch of UCI races this weekend this year, and every race has been these ridiculously like catastrophic, floody, muddy events. Yeah. And he's like, can I just get a dry race? That's not so technical, but anyway, thought that was cool to see.
Yeah. I have to say that when I saw those conditions, I wasn't, but so sad that I wasn't there, like just standing in the rain all day long.
So. Yeah. You know, it's got that little, like, I guess, creek that goes through there. And I was just I was thinking of logistically how you get around that event when it's flooded like that. Because, you know, last year, Bill, we were there and you could jump across the creek multiple points and get to various spots. Or they also had a flyover. They had a couple bridges. But yeah, I mean, you had to bring your hip waders out this weekend, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, that's what Sonny, I think, was saying, that for part of the course, they only had to tape one side because the water was so high that was just, you know, the other side of the course is just in the pond. Anything else we want to add about Ruts and Guts?
You know, I think it's interesting to think that last year they were a C1. You know, they didn't have enough international riders. They became a C2 this year. Once again, this is an event that, you know, we've been to last year. Super great event, really fun venue to photograph and to watch a race at. I'm curious what's next for them, if they're going to continue on, or, you know, it's kind of tying back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier. Like, I'm anxiously waiting to see how this calendar is going to shape up and wondering where Ruts will be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, kind of what we were saying before with the beginning with the World Cup and where that's all going to land. We just don't know. I mean, we have just no idea where any of these races are going to be.
So next week is the final week of UCI Cross in the States. And we've got we have a split weekend actually. We've got Resolution in Dallas, and then we've got NBX in, and I'm not from the East Coast, Rhode Island, correct? Is that NBX is in Rhode Island?
Yes.
Someone shoot me, tell me wrong. Anyway, so that's actually that wraps up the Vittoria series. No, that's wrong. It's the
you got it. Nailed it. Go with that. The Vittoria series. That's all you have to say. This is what I've been coached. Just say the Vittoria series.
Vittoria series.
You don't even have to say the Vittoria series of New England Cyclocross or anything like that. Just the Vittoria series. You're on solid ground.
Well, that wraps up next week at MBX, which I got to say is a cool venue, and I really want to go to there one day. It looks like a super fun spot to photograph. I always think about that beach run along the seawall. Interesting thing with that series is there's a three-way tie for first place in the men's race between Curtis Wright, Travis Liverman, and Tobin Ortenblad. And another interesting fact is that they're tied that way because Tobin's won 2 days, White's won 2 days, both events that they have, they weren't at. And then you've got Liverman, as you say on the heat check, the privateer's privateer, just grinding his way out to a first place in the standings.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Curtis wraps it up at NBX.
I mean, is Kerry racing there? Do we know? I guess I haven't looked at start lists yet. And the problem is pros, elites, you guys all register 4 hours before registration closes. We know you do it. But I was trying to get a sense because I know is Kerry going out west?
Kerry may be done before nationals. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's right. Because if he had the Pro CX locked up, then it was. I mean, so it's kind of interesting because last year we had MBX the first 2 weeks out. Last year MBX was a C1 weekend, and so that brought out all the hitters. Then the next weekend Ruts was a C1 weekend right before Nats, and so that brought I think more people than usual. This, we have two C2s this weekend. New England is going to draw Curtis White and some of the riders who historically kind of go out there, but there's not as much coherent. There's not as much motivation to race this last week before.
Well, it's also
before nationals.
I mean, just demographic. I mean, logistically, it's completely different. I mean, you could easily, everybody could go to, I mean, that's what I did. Everybody went to Broken Arrow last year, and then you could just go straight to Louisville, and it wasn't that big of a deal. The travel wasn't that tough. Now, if you have to drive a vehicle, you have to go from Resolution in Dallas to up to Tacoma, Washington, or from Rhode Island, to all the way across the country. Both are some daunting tasks, within a couple days. So I think that's one of the reasons that you may not see the numbers that we did last year in those last races of the year.
So if you guys were athletes, I mean, would you want to race the weekend before nationals? I it seems like I would want to, but I don't know.
I think it depends. Yes. I mean, I think somebody like Kerry is winding down the season and is looking at that as a couple weeks off and coming in there supercharged to hit nationals. Just going all out and look at the other favorites. I mean, we haven't seen Hyde out there racing on the men's side. We, Curtis will, I'm assuming, race NBX, but maybe not. And he hasn't, raced in a week or so. Gage hasn't raced right in a week or so. I mean, Lance was out here. So I don't know. It seems like it's almost like what we used to see with nationals, which would be everybody would go to Athens or go to Phoenix and have like these training camps because we had nationals in January and the season ended, early December. So it was almost this month off and then nobody raced, they all were just training. Other side, that doesn't happen anymore. Now it's, that was one of the things I think a lot of us liked about this new, moving to December, is that it really condensed the schedule and it made it so that we were racing right into nationals. If you're somebody like Ellen, who's coming back, and hasn't had as many races, I think doing 3 weeks in a row is no big deal for her, or, especially if she's coming into it fresh and if she can get that confidence, that's going to be something that's going to benefit her, as opposed to, I think that's where, Katie and Katie are at a bit of a disadvantage because they're racing and racing and racing, and then they have to travel from Europe. So, I mean, they definitely have the I think that they are at a disadvantage, you know, with that schedule over people who are racing domestically. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of this whole new world that we're in, since it used to be that nobody raced before Nationals because there were no races to race.
Well, on the Katie's, I know Katie Compton's been home for a week now, so she'll actually have like good 3 weeks. But I'm unsure because Katie Keough's been doing the Super Prestige series, and Zonhoven is on Sunday, and so that could be a decent amount of stress. I don't know. It's hard to find start list, so I don't know if she's racing or not. But
yeah,
you know, that would create an additional amount of travel. Whereas it seems like Katie Compton's kind of got it dialed where she goes home, she chills in Colorado Springs, stays healthy or tries to stay healthy, and, you know, gets in her block that way. So
yeah, good. Maybe she'll jump into one of those Colorado races.
Didn't she do that last year? She like jumped in a men's masters race the weekend before Nationals, I think.
Probably.
I thought she did it at Nationals.
No, maybe, I think like her warm-up for Nats last year was to do like a local Colorado men's masters race or something. I mean, don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure she did that last year. So I don't know. When you're Katie Compton, I just assume by now you have whatever you're doing dialed, and
it's
for a reason.
I didn't realize she was back, and I thought that the thing that they were kind of worried about this year was her contracts with Dave Ave or whatever else. And I know that she's missing at least one race, right, to race Nationals. So I didn't realize that they were gonna miss others as well. So good to know. Good intel there, Zach.
Well, on the other side, the women's sides of the Vittoria series, Rebecca Ferringer and Caroline Nolan are tied for first, and neither of them are signed up yet. I mean, it is Monday for MBX, so it's kind of the similar situation. Really curious to see, you know, how that shakes out. I mean, I don't know what the, you know, what the prize list is for winning that overall series. But
I do.
Okay.
There is none.
Is it? There is none. Got it. Okay. Well, then that it's not a hard decision if, you know, although I guess Ferringer is from the Northeast. That's where she lives, right?
Yep.
So
yeah,
could be worth racing for her if she likes to. You know, if that what suits her legs the best.
Everybody in Ohio right now is screaming at their podcast machine saying she's from Ohio. She lives in New England.
Someone once told me that everybody who's anybody is from Ohio. So I'll give all the Ohioans that.
Wasn't that a Fire Hose album from Ohio?
Oh, man.
All right.
I just want to say, I did check, like, Katie Compton's warm-up was a Masters men's race for Nationals last year. And there is a media pit tie-in because Chris Case of Velo News won that race.
Oh, nice. Very good.
So, anyway, got to always, when there's a media pit tie-in, you got to roll with it when you're on the media pit.
You know, got to keep it in the family. Okay.
All right.
Speaking of pits.
Yeah.
That was a phenomenal segue.
Thank you.
You set them up.
What?
Wait, time out. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa. For NBX, there's one Jeremy Powers registered.
Oh.
Wait.
What?
Wait, I thought I was looking at NBX.
I mean, are we listening? I do looking at the Elite Men. He still has a really good cross results score.
All right.
I don't see him.
Is there a see more button?
Wow, that's another media pit tie-in because now
for
Jeremy
sure.
His team is the Global Cycling Network.
He threatened.
He signed up in the Masters race?
What? No, he's in the elites, man.
He threatened to race DCCX and then just never followed through on that. So good to see he's getting at least one UCI race in.
That's awesome. No, I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be great.
It's expensive Maybe. UCI license for two races, but hey, whatever.
It's a business expense now.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So we were segueing. Sorry. We were segueing.
No, that's fine. I just, I lost my tweet here. I gotta find it again. So many angry replies. I can't find the original. Ta-da.
Okay. Well, okay. I confirmed that I can see Jeremy Powers on Bike Reg, but I don't see him on the race predictor. So.
Oh, interesting.
User error. No, maybe, okay, I'll, now I'll he's bet, on Saturday. You know,
I'll bet he is not on the race predictor because he changed his team name, I will bet.
No, he's there on Saturday. He's not there on Sunday.
Jeremy Powers doesn't race on Sunday?
He's not,
come
he doesn't
on
race
now.
2 days.
This is Jeremy Powers we're talking about, dog.
I'm going to go race? Ahead and say that he registered while we were talking. That's what happened.
He's just racing that one day. He's going to head out to Coma and jump into Nationals.
He's going to sand them legs. You know he's going to be doing a lot of. He's going to need a lot of content gathering at Nationals. So yeah, yep. You're right.
Yep.
Maybe he's going to race the non-championship race again, like he did last year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be good. Check he's those pre-reg lists.
He's got to defend that non-jersey.
Can you defend the non-championship medal?
Well, I guess if he does a non-defense of the non-championship, then that'll be perfect. It'll all
well,
work
that
out.
Could be. You know, I'll nominate that right now as our cross move weak move choice for next week for very on brand for Nationals is elites doing the non-champ races.
Yeah,
that's my early nomination.
All right.
Oh, so you don't want my hot take? So save it for next week, you're saying?
Save it for next week.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay.
All right.
Write it down.
Cross move or soft move.
Can you see the steam coming off my head right
Uh-oh.
Now?
Oh, man. I'm already... No, that's just the... I think that's just because you blurred your camera, your background. All right, Bill, did you find your tweet?
I did. 208 likes, 9 retweets, 94 replies. What if we got rid of the pits in amateur cyclocross racing? One bike, one set of wheels, go or don't go. Now, I just put that out there with no explanation and got some interesting, just ran the spectrum of replies from this would be great to the most common reply I got, it must have been 4 or 5, and it was interesting because it was all from different people, yet the scenario was identical. And I think what I've learned, this is the biggest thing that I learned, if you live exactly 3 hours away from a race, you will mechanical within the first 2 minutes of that race. That is what I learned because there were like 5 people that were like, oh, it would really suck to drive 3 hours to a race and then have your race over within the first 2 minutes of the race. So what I've learned from this whole exercise is that don't live more than 2 hours away from the race and you should be fine with one bike.
Hey, I'm always trying to not live too far from bike races, but sometimes, you know, it doesn't shake out that way.
Yeah. In all seriousness, this is what I was trying to get at with that tweet and just asking, you know, I wasn't putting this out there as like, we need to change the rules and get rid of the pits, you know, but maybe I think people have come up with some good alternatives. But it was more that, you know, we have people who get into cyclocross and they're really gung-ho about it and they race in the Cat 5s and they just have one bike and they just do it. And for the most part, you know, you can go a lot of races without, you know, without flatting or having a mechanical or whatever else. And then by the time they're done with their Cat 5 season and they're ready to upgrade, then they get serious about it and then they're all shopping for a bike, a second bike and pit wheels and all this kind of stuff, and then they're paying their friends $20 to go be in the pits for them for their, you know, Cat 3 race, and then it just becomes this whole thing that you need to do this whole production to go race an amateur race, And I think that that is fun for a while. I mean, doing all of that and all the bells and whistles of getting ready for a race. But then after a while, I think that also people get tired of all of that and they don't want to deal with it anymore. So it was more just trying to find ways to simplify the racing experience. And maybe if that was something where if we were able to do that, that would keep people in the sport longer, you know, and people, you know, debated that, but then also came up with other reasons why that really has nothing to do with people leaving the sport, and it's a whole other slew of things. But what do you guys think about the whole like amateur racing? Oh, the other thing that people were kept throwing at me was like, well, then the juniors never learn how to change bikes, and I was like, well, you know, once they're if they're serious, once they're 15 or 16, they're racing in junior UCI races anyway, and it's a pretty quick learning curve to how to exchange a bike. You don't need to. It's not one of those skills. It's not like, you know, ice skating where if you don't start when you're 5 years old, then you're just never going to catch up if you want to do it competitively. So, what do you guys think, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as our resident. One of our resident Cat 3 experts. We had a lot of mud races this year, you know, so I think like the example I was thinking of is like legit having a pit bike. We had 8-10 mud races this year. And so I'm fortunate enough to have a Trek Boone. Thank you, Chad Brown, who's a listener of the pod, friend of the pod, Chad Brown from Trek. But then, you know, I had this race where my bike just packed up and I finished like DFL because I couldn't ride my bike anymore.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring my old commuter, my old bike. And I got my girlfriend to work in the pit for me. and I swapped and like I legitimately this one race picked up two spots from just pitting half a lap because the change made that much of a difference, even on a shitty cantilever bike that I hated racing in the mud.
So is she like and she was washing the bike for you and.
Well, she scraped it off enough to like. We did not acquire a Works Power Shot yet. We need to get one. But like, it makes a difference even at the Cat 3 level in a mud race. It can be the difference between competing and not competing is having a pit bike if your competitors do. But like, that's a shit ton of money. Like, that's so much money, you know. And I see some of my other competitors have like two carbon bikes, and it's like I'm already at a disadvantage because I don't have a job that can. You know, afford that. So that's kind of the perspective I had because honestly, like if you get a mechanical, like your race is over anyway. And I think a lot of series have pit bikes and stuff. So it was interesting that the 3 hour example, like if you're mechanicaling 2 minutes in, like you're racing for like not so great. But I see it more as like you need a pit bike to be competitive when it's muddy.
Yeah, and well, then it got into the whole there was a lot of, you know, call the paramedic because I'm going to injure myself, patting myself on the back. It's like, I don't care. I'm just not DFLing. And I'm not DNFing. And if I DFL, that's fine. But I'm going to finish that damn race. And if I don't have a pit bike, I'm not going to be able to do that. So I'm not going to pay all this money not to finish my race. And, you know, I kind of look at it like mountain biking. You don't get a pit bike. And if something goes wrong, then you're just kind of done. And everybody accepts that because that's the culture of the sport. Where here, the culture of the sport is we're able to have these things to help us finish races at all levels. But if we never had those things, how would it, you know, what would the perception be?
Yeah. I don't know. I actually don't know where I land on this, Bill, because I've also, hands up, fellow resident Cat 3 crosser, and I never had a pit bike. I never raced the pit bike. I put wheels in the pit countless times, never grabbed them. Oftentimes, if I don't think I ever, if I would have gotten a flat and had to ran to the pit and changed the wheel, like, A, my race would have been over in terms of the competition that I was in against another rider. And B, I probably would have just quit because cross is hard. And so then I'm like, all right, well, I can drink a beer now. So I guess I'm trying to understand how, I still don't get how not having, because it's like, to me, it's like I would race, yeah, like not being able to get a pit bike didn't keep me from doing the intervals or keep me from going to all the races, you know. the wheels in the pit were a sort of an insurance policy, but it was a pretty shitty one. And so I don't know, like, I don't know how that would change the newbie beginner, you know, because, you know, sometimes at my local races, like, you know, there is a pit, but it's not a pit with like stalls and no one stands in the pit and like changed out a bike. Even in the 1-2-3 races, like the bike's on the ground and you like run in there and you pick it up and you run away. So it's such at a different level for us in Louisiana, Mississippi, that I can't see that really having any sort of effect. But, you know, I'm in a different market. But it was, I enjoyed that you put that out there because, you know, it is something that kind of gets us out of these, like, gets us thinking about this sport in a different, from a different viewpoint. And I think we're all trying to find like fun ways to mix it up. So,
well, I guess, know. Yeah. And that's where I sort of came down on it too. I was like, yes, I, as another Cat 3 racer, I think by the time I stopped racing, I did have a bike in the pits, but I never had anybody like working for me in the pits. So then it just comes down to something. And I think this is what most of the examples were, was something catastrophic happens. You know, you have a flat or you have some mechanical and you have that other bike or wheels in there and you can go and grab them. I never did that. I think that there are solutions for that. What I think is unnecessary is having a pit crew in there, having somebody cleaning your bike. If your bike's caked up with mud, you get off your bike, you clean the mud out of there, and then you get back on and you continue with your race. I mean, I think that that is kind of part of it. And that if that, what that comes down to is like, hey, maybe I don't ride through that section. Maybe I get off my bike and shoulder it and run through that section to make sure that my bike can still, you know, move when I'm riding. And if it gets all caked up and my bike doesn't turn, then I'm going to stick my fingers in between the chainstays and get all that gunk out of there and maybe make it so it moves again. In the situation where you're driving 3 hours and your race is over in 2 minutes, you know, a lot of people brought up, and I think, Zach, you have this in your area. We don't in ours. I think it's a great idea where you actually have neutral support. So there are bikes available. There are wheels available. And I think that if you have a pit official, much like in road racing, you know, that sees that you have a legitimate mechanical, then you can get neutral support and you can get new wheels. Or, you know, even if you have enough bikes there, you can get a bike. But I think that taking away possibly, and again, I'm not advocating this. I'm just looking for ways to make it a more level playing field and keep people around longer, that if you sort of eliminate the whole pit exchanges and anything but pro races, maybe it makes it more fun for everyone. And the five people who are on your wide angle podium every week aren't the same five people week after week after week if they're coming in there with that advantage.
Well, and I think you're touching on the point of making it something that people can do long term, because I think what you're seeing is, you know, you start as a Cat 5 and you see people warming up on trainers. Remember when I started, I was like, do I need to get a trainer? Is this how I need to warm up? And my friend's like, dude, just go ride your bike around the block. I'm like, all right, we're good. You know, but then people are like, do you have tubulars? You got to have tubulars, man. Like, well, what? Like, no, what's a tubular? You know, and it just becomes this thing after thing. And you're like, oh, do you have a spare set? You need a set of mud wheels. You got to have mud wheels. And it creates this overwhelming, you know, for a beginner, like, you're just like, hey, I want to go do cyclocross. And it creates kind of this overwhelming thing. And then it's like, hey, do you have a pit bike? You need a pit bike. It's like, geez, like, how much stuff do I need? And, you know, I think as we get towards the elite level, we're like, all right, well, this makes sense, right? Like, I understand why I need two wheel sets. I understand why I need a pit bike. I understand why, admittedly, at my last race, I got my dad to work the pits for me, Euro style, which nice. I think he enjoyed. Our pit exchange was in. We probably could probably work on our pit exchanges, but it's not that hard to learn. But yeah, I think you're onto something in terms of, you know, it's just, you got to have this, and this, and, you know, we want cross to be more accepting. And, you know, it's part of why to do this, to go to gravel, is no one tells you need this, or this. They're just like, oh, cool, you have a bike.
Yeah.
There's your bike ride.
What? And you're good. Everybody's telling me what I need for gravel.
Well, your average person will go to a gravel event and, like, they'll just be like, oh, you brought this bike, and why did you pick this bike? You're like, it's what I had. They're like, that's cool. You know, I think there's more of that accepting, whereas in cross, the purists or the people who have been in it are like, well, you need this, and then you need this jacket to warm up in, and you need these pants because you're going to get muddy, and it's like, ah, I need so much stuff. It's very overwhelming.
Yeah, I know that there is a certain constituency out there, and I definitely fell into it when I started racing, where that all that stuff's fun. I mean, it's fun having your little zip-off pants when you get to the start line. It's fun, you know, having that debate with your friends whether, even though it's raining, you can still race file treads because there's still a lot of grass on the course and it's not muddy. You know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I agree is fun, but I'm just looking at it more at you seeing these amateur races and look, most places in the country aren't holding UCI races. So Michael, what you're seeing at your races is what most people around the country are seeing. You're not seeing a UCI dimensioned pits with whole exchange lanes, and you know, like a legitimate legal pit is the size of a football field. This is what people don't really understand if you've never been in one. I think that most U.S. pits are too small. If you were to measure them out, they actually do not meet the UCI requirement. UCI pits, I mean, look at the World Cup pits. I mean, those things are, you know, it takes you a minute to walk from one end to the other end. I mean, they are long pits. That's what every UCI race is supposed to have. If we have that, it would take up like half of the parks that these races are actually in. So we can't do that. So right from there, you're having these little confined spaces. If everybody's going to show up with, you know, two friends and three bikes and all of that, it just, I don't know. It sort of gets away from that kind of amateur ethos that I think you can still have fun without that.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing about that. That is, you know, that is part of cycling that I think a lot of people do enjoy. And I know that there is sort of like a two sides to that coin of like, it's too much consumerism, it's too much stuff, like just run what you brung. But there is a lot of us who do geek out over all that stuff. And I think you do see people, and maybe you're illuminating this, Bill, that you do go through that arms race, and then you kind of get to a point where I am right now, where I haven't raced a ton of crosses here, but every race I've raced on my girlfriend's gravel tires, because I just don't. I mean, it's just what it is. Like, I'm just like, I'm gonna go out there and have fun, and so like, I think it's interesting. Like, you can come at the sport from totally different mentalities, kind of depending on where you were at in the sport. And I see what you're saying now. Like, how do you take that sort of ethos of after you kind of like, you're not chasing stuff so much anymore. Like, how do you bring that to the beginners and make that more? Yeah. I mean, I like that idea that like someone who wins every week, the Cat 4 race in your local series, at a muddy race, like bogs up his derailleur and isn't able to finish, and then someone else gets to win. Like, you know, that's kind of cool. That mixes it up, I guess. And, you know, that changes things.
It's also, I guess, part of it. And again, this is not something that I am like, will fight to the death over, you know, if this doesn't change.
You're not going to go to the UCI meeting after nationals and like say, this is your like hill you're going to die on.
No, this is definitely not the hill I'm going to die on, but it's also, it just goes back to, I think, a lot of what we've been talking about this entire year and sort of making this sport our own. It's something that, and again, I like this neutral wheel, neutral frame type thing. I think that's great. That way people can still race. But I think that if you eliminated like bringing more than one bike, we can make that rule, and that can be part of American cyclocross. And then you got to find new sort of innovative ways to deal with that. And I don't know, you know, what those will be, but I don't know. It's sort of fun to think about how we can make the sport our own, and that may be something. And again, the whole point of this, and again, that's what I was asking most of the people who were like calling me an idiot for bringing this up. I was like, look, That's all I'm thinking about, is how do we keep people in this sport longer? This was my idea. What's yours? Which was basically, I was just typing over and over and over again, and people came up with good stuff. I mean, it's the stuff that you're going to hear about anything. It's people just getting to a certain point in their life and they don't race anymore. They burn out on it, or they don't want to, you know, it is the upgrade issues that we've talked about. I mean, there's a whole lot of other stuff. And then there, of course, you're going to get the people who chime in and go, well, I don't understand why you think the sport's dying. The sport's fine. And again, not my point at all, where I do think that the sport is fine. I think we've plateaued a little bit as far as participation goes, but I think that, I don't know if it's necessarily dying, but I think that doesn't mean you rest on your laurels and you don't think of ways that may make it more appealing to people. And that was kind of the goal of this exercise.
I think two things. I think I like your idea of neutral bikes or support. They have to be Bromptons. Second thing is that you can have extra wheels, but you have to race with them on your back. Like, you know, original Tour de France.
Can I tell you, and Zach, I'll let you chime in here, but can I tell you what actually prompted me to sort of come up with this? Because we see it at DCCX some, where people will ride their bike to the race. And I was actually talking to Keith Garrison about Rainy Park. And one of the things is they don't have a lot of parking, and a lot of people show up with, you know, they will have their, not even an extra pair of wheels, but their race wheels attached to their back, and they'll have their commuter wheels on their bike, and they'll switch them out at the park and go race and have a great time and go home. And that sort of spurred me into thinking, I was like, well, that's kind of awesome. What if we just did that?
Yeah, I mean, I come at it, I think that I think most people, even that bring pit bikes, are like, yeah, I don't change if it's dry. I just know in Wisconsin, we had so many, in Chicago, we had so many muddy races, and it makes such a huge difference.
Yeah.
And I think, like, so, because I did a race, it was near my parents' house. I rode my bike to the race. It was incredible. It was awesome. I had one bike, and I got to ride to a cyclocross race.
That's the coolest thing ever. Is riding to the race.
Oh, totally. It was awesome. I got my warm up in. I was good to go. Like, it was just, it was great. You know, but at the same time, like, I've had races ended when it's muddy. Like, I've been at the top of Mount Crumpet when I had to detach my cantilever brakes because there was so much mud on them. Like, yeah. So, like, it's just like, I could see, you know, I if I'm in that situation, I kind of want everyone in that situation. So maybe I'm a little biased. I don't know. And I like the neutral support. So it does cost money. We do pay extra. But I can tell you, part of my state championship problem was I had a mechanical. And so I had to ride on flat pedals with my mountain bike shoes. And
yeah.
Let me tell you how rutted the Trek course is right now. Like, you're not winning. I was taking hand ups. I'm just like, it was the most miserable half lap of my life. So I mean, I don't know if you're really that much better off with that. I don't know. Like, to me, that's where it is. It's like, if you want to bring pit wheels, that's fine. You're not winning the race. But, yeah. You know,
well,
I think
I would
it's
also, my thing with this, too, because I think the first person that chimed in was like, well, that would have been great for all those people who raced, you know, at Masters Worlds, whose race would have been over in Louisville in the first 5 minutes. And, you know, my kind of snarky response was like, well, you had to go back to 2012 to find an example of where this would suck. And second, I think for those types of races, I'm all in favor of it. If it's a Wisconsin championship race, heck yeah. You should have as much as you want. I mean, for big races, do what you need to do. I mean, I think those are special circumstances. But I was just trying to think, like, you know, just kind of amateur. I always go back to this is on some level, even though, you know, train our asses off to do better at some level, it's still rec league softball, and people kind of lose track of that a little bit. But
so this is, you know, I know you addressed this is sort of at the amateur level, but I actually want to apply this to the pros and say that no pit bikes for Matthew Vanderpool.
Yeah,
I knew that's where you were going.
Can we start handicapping the pros? You know, maybe it's one pit what? Bike. Maybe you got to run the barriers twice.
Could put them on junior gears.
What if Vanderpool had to run cannies, junior gearing, and file treads at every single race?
Yeah.
That's a fun what if.
Yeah.
He's still my favorite to win every race.
Oh, he'll still...
I mean, someone pointed this out on Twitter, and maybe, I don't know what it was, but it was like, what if the more you win, the farther in the back of the grid you are put? You know, I know we're kind of moved past your point, and now this is like, I'm talking about
pros. I'm fine with it. Yeah, keep going.
Just like, Vanderpool has to start at the back. I feel like this is a way that there's some other sports that start off this way, and I can't think of it right now, but this is not like an unprecedented way of organizing something. I feel like the first time I came to cross and I saw that the winners were at the front, I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. They're the fastest, right? They should be at the back. I don't know. I think there's a lot of fun rabbit holes we can go down in terms of like tweaking cross that would maybe be a whole other episode on itself. And I'm sure you could posit something on Twitter, Bill, and you would get a lot of great ideas.
Here's my counter argument to this, and I understand that we want competitive races, and this is where I think it's interesting if you compare this to other sports, in that people love winning streaks in other sports, right? I mean, oh man, you know, even though a bad example, because I know everybody hates the New England Patriots, but like when they're undefeated and they may like beat the, you know, 72 Dolphins and go undefeated the whole way, that's like the huge storyline that I think people get behind, and then they get upset when they lose. You know, in tennis, we'll see these streaks where people just win and win and win, and it's like just nerve wracking. Oh my God, they may lose a match, but. For whatever reason, for us in cyclocross, we hate it. So why is that?
Do we hate it? Or do...
Well, exactly.
No.
So, like, everybody is nervous now, except for Katie Compton, about her streak. And is she going to keep this streak alive? And it's, like, this huge deal. But... like with Vanderpool, we're like, geez, can't somebody just beat him? So is it just because, what's the difference?
I mean, I think it's because he's winning so easily. I mean, he's effortless. I mean, look, to Michael's point of why we grid based on cross results, or why we grid based on UCI points, is Vanderpool got stuck behind a scrub zone crash and he still won the race. He was in first a lap later. You know, yeah. Which is a big reason why I think we grid based on skill, is because of scrub zone crashes, and like, kind of sucks to get caught back there. But I mean, I think it's because he wins so easily, and we look at the field and we're like, who's going to beat him? Yeah. You know, we started him on the fourth row, he still won. We got him caught in a scrub zone crash, still won. You know, Easter beat through
but
everything.
You're kind of bolstering my point.
No. Oh. But I think it's because we don't think anyone's going to beat him anytime soon.
Okay. So it's just inevitable.
Well, isn't it that we actually want to see him lose? Because if he loses, that would indicate that there was an actual race that happened. I mean, if he loses because he DNFs or, you know, breaks himself, that's one thing. But the fact that there was some sort of struggle, and we've seen it this year, that the way Vanderpool is winning is a bit different than he has in the past. I mean, maybe it takes a few more laps to settle out in the way it has. And that's been really interesting to see other riders, you know, throw their haymakers. And also, you know, the storyline with Katie, it's like, I think it's great. It's amazing feat what she's done. The fact that we're talking about pit bikes, the fact that she's won 15 races and she's never lost because of a mechanical. But I think that the better story is going to be not that she won 16 in a row or 17 in a row. It's going to be that the year that she lost and how that race was lost. That to me is that's what I want to see actually. And I'm not saying that I'm rooting against Katie Compton, but I am rooting for that streak at the end because that is more compelling to me.
No, I think that it will be definitely be a story, but I think that also we love records. So is it that he's, I mean, is this a record now? Does he have like the longest winning streak ever in cyclocross?
It's got to be. I mean, it's
tough
to find.
I was
going to
look this stuff up, but we decided not to talk about Euro stuff on this, the media pit. But no, it's like 34, 35.
We're not talking about specific races.
I mean, Sven had that one year where he lost like only twice, and then there was another rider who only lost twice. But man, 35 in a row now, it's got to be.
Yeah, and it's just, well, I guess that's just my point, is that the sentiment is, can he win 36 or can he win 37? And maybe you're right. Maybe because they're not close races, it's not, you know, instead it's, oh God, I wish somebody would just finally beat him. I wish we could have a race. Wasn't it great when they raced with him, you know, like what was the last World Cup where they raced with him pretty much until the last lap and then he got away. Yeah. I don't know. I just find it interesting. You know, it's kind of the people that we don't want to lose and the people that we do want to lose. I don't know what that has to do with pit bikes.
Well, but like,
I want Vanderpool to win on the road and in mountain biking, but I want him to lose in cross.
Yeah.
That's where I stand.
Well, but I mean, to your analogy of like, you know, records and other teams and stuff, I mean, I think there's a lot of those successful teams though that we really hate too, right? I think that, you know, there is the sports hate, like we outside New England hate the Patriots. It's just the way things are. And I don't think anyone hates Matthew Vanderpool. Like, he's a very likable guy. Like, he's a great representative for our sport. So maybe we need more villains who are good. So if like, maybe if he took like a heel turn, then maybe we'd be tuning in being like, I really hope that this guy, you know, I think there is some of that, right? We want Duke to lose. We want the Yankees
I was just going
to
say, who is going to be the Stephen F. Austin of the cyclocross world?
Exactly. But we all hate Kentucky. Like, that's part of the thing though, is, you know, I mean, Vanderpool's a very likable, you know, he was like the Red Sox before they won that World Series and all their fans turned into, oh, we have a lot of New England listeners, don't we? Uh-oh. Okay. I don't know. We need a heel. Maybe we need a heel who's good.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, who's coming back is Wout. And Wout and Vanderpool, to me, have always been sort of opposite, you know, players. And not that Vanderpool is a villain. Well, sorry, I'm showing my card here. But, you know, not that one is good and one is bad. And one is the hero and one is a villain. But it's just their personalities, to me, have been different. And the way they sort of race have been so different that's the dynamic that's been set up. And so, interestingly enough, Wout's going to come back at the end of December. I mean, that's something that's could maybe make it interesting, although I kind of don't think so. Bill is shaking his head. Yeah, I mean, I don't have high hopes.
He couldn't beat him when he didn't break himself in half.
Well, he'll always have that first heat that Wout got the Tour de France stage victory before Vanderpool did. So he'll always have that.
Yeah. He has more world championships, elite world championships than Vanderpool.
For now.
Yeah.
As of this recording, yes.
For another month or so.
Yeah. Is that a prediction, Bill? Can we put you down for that one?
That Vanderpool's going to win?
Yes.
As long as he enters the race, yes. With him, who knows? It's just like mountain biking when they're like, you're 2 points away from winning the World Cup. Don't you want to go race the last race? He's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Happy with my season. So who knows? He may do the same. He may win the Dave A.V. and be like, nah, I'm good.
Maybe, yeah. You know, that's the risk you take.
I think he has said that he wants another world championship, though. But I fear, though, that then that'll kind of be it for him in cyclocross for a while. That would be my guess.
I still think he'll go for four. I think he has to. I don't know who's got the most. Was five? Does someone have five CX world championships? Anyway. But I feel like at the rate he's going, he'll probably want to own the record, and he doesn't need to do a full season. You know, he can hop in and win the big ones and
Well, so one thing, I mean, you touched on WoW returning. I did find that interesting because for this reason, at the beginning of the year, when they had a video of him in like August needing assistance to walk, literally like assistance to walk, they were like, his team was like, look, we don't think this is happening this year. And then you kind of, you saw him running at the beach. There were those paparazzi photos and it was like,
isn't
that's
amazing.
Cute.
Like, didn't that look like the most remote photo? That's what he said. He's like, I can't go anywhere.
Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of like, oh, that's cool. Like he still has like, he's doing it for whatever reason. And then 2 weeks later, he's like, I'm back. If the doctors say, okay. It seems like he actually really legitimately enjoys cyclocross and wants it to be a part of his program because, like, there is no reason for him to be racing cyclocross this season. Like, he should be resting, recovering, and getting ready for the spring classics. And he's like, no, I want to race cross. And, like, I think that's a good sign for, like, him being a part of this sport. He's like, shoot, I won, you know, I did well at the classics. I won a stage at the tour, and I did all of that while still racing a full cyclocross season.
Yeah, I think that he will be in it longer than Vanderpool will be, but who knows? I think we did it. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me being a Cat 3 racing cross with no pit bike. You can also find me on the internet at Yeah You Ride. You can find me on Twitter at LandSoftly.
Zach, where can we find you in the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, that's right. We'll be in Lakewood, Washington at Fort Steliacoom. Steliacoom. We're going to need to get a
pronunciation.
That's
going to be job number one is we're going to find Scott Herman. Yeah. And we're going to let him tell us how we're supposed to say the name.
It's not Steliacoom?
It might be.
You're from around there. You should know.
Yeah, I don't know that one. Okay. I think it's Steliacoom, but
yeah, okay. No, I'm excited. I'm stoked for next week. It sounds like for the media pit, we might have like a mega preview, kind of looking at Nats. This is kind of what we've been building to all season long for the domestic scene. So stoked about that. And then we'll be off to Lakewood. Masters Racing starts at like 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning, and we'll be covering it like a blanket at CXMagazine.com. Dang.
Perfect. Awesome. All right. Go follow everything that's going on at the Wide Angle Podium, wideanglepodium.com. And we'll be back here with our cyclocross nationals previews, predictions, and prognostications next week. See you guys then.